novel. I also think it's actually really unfortunate that, like, the person who gives the strongest performance acting-wise in this is, like, the Nepo baby. Like, you girls need to really...
Who's the Nepo baby that gave the good performance?
The one who's, like, crazy. Everyone, this is Alex.
And this is Em.
Welcome to the latest episode of The Good, The Bad, The Basic.
This is the podcast for anyone who enjoys binging new TV series and revisiting old favorites. On this podcast, we'll be discussing what we love, what we hate, and what's just a bit problematic about the TV and movies that we're addicted to, though not necessarily in that order.
This week, we continue our limited edition season and dive into a discussion of the suspenseful, heart-pounding teen drama, Panic.
Set in the fictional town of Carp, Texas, Panic follows a group of recently graduated high school seniors who spend the summer after high school participating in increasingly dangerous games, with the ultimate goal being enough money to escape their dead-end lives. But the game of mysterious origins has been corrupted, and what was once dangerous has now turned deadly.
So is Panic worth watching? Stay tuned.
All right, everyone, here's some details about Panic. The show is classified as a young adult and a drama in the genres. It is an Amazon Prime original. It was released May 28th, 2021. It's inspired by the novel Panic by Lauren Oliver, who happens to be the show's writer and creator. The series stars Olivia Welch as Heather Nill, our protagonist. Ray Nicholson as Ray Hall. He is Panic's money collector, and he's also a participant. He also happens to be a Panic legacy, whose older brother won last year's game of Panic, or not last year's, but a former game of Panic, and he's Heather's love interest. Jessica Sula stars as Natalie Williams. She is a Panic game creator and a dummy participant. She's also Heather's best friend. Cameron Jones as Bishop Moore. He is Panic's bag man. He is holding all of the money. He is Heather's best friend and initial crush, and he is one of the few wealthy people in the town. Mike Faye stars as Dodge Mason, a new student who transferred to town in their senior year, and he's also a Panic participant. Enrique Murciano as James Cortez, the local sheriff whose son died in last year's games. Todd Williams as John Williams, Natalie's father, and a police captain. Moira Kelly as Natalie Cortez, Sheriff Cortez's wife. Rachel Bay Jones as Sherry Nill, Heather's mother. Bonnie Bedelia as Ann McCarthy, Heather's employer. Madison Ferris as Dana Mason, Dodge's sister. Nancy McKeon as Jessica Mason, Dodge and Dana's mother, as well as Sheriff Cortez's mistress. And last but not least, Ben Kane as George Moore, Bishop Moore's father, and a Carp judge. Not a Panic judge, but an actual judicial courtroom judge. So this is a breakdown of Panic. Every year, there are two judges. Nobody knows who the judges are. There is one bag man who keeps all of the money that's been collected. No one knows who that is either. There is a game creator. No one knows who that is. The only people that anyone actually does know is the money collector, who collects $1 from every student for every single day that school is in session. We know who that is. And we know who the two MCs are, and those are the people who obviously narrate and direct the Panic games. So that's where we are.
Okay. Yeah, that's a lot. I know that's a lot, but but it's all necessary information. Panic is an interesting show. First of all, you go first, Alex. Tell me your overall feelings about the show.
I didn't like it.
You didn't like it?
No. It asked too much of me, like, to be honest. Okay.
At this point, I know you well enough that I had a sneaking suspicion that would be the answer, but I want you to tell me why, because it's the why that I don't know.
Oh, okay. I feel like, okay, well, here's the thing. Well, here, let me try to qualify. Let me try to, like, reframe. So I think if you're looking for a show that you would just want to have on in the background, and then while you're doing something, and then every couple of whenever, you're just kind of like, you sort of look up and you're like, huh, that's weird. But then you go back to what you're doing, then this is a perfect show. Like, this is like a great show for that. But you don't, like, just something where things happen, but you don't like have to think about it. You're not that invested. You're just sort of, it's just sort of on. Then I think the show served its purpose. And I know that sounds mean, but like, it's, I don't mean it to be, because I do think that idea or those kinds of shows are something that like exist now, in the sense of like, as a culture, like this is set, like this is how we watch television now. I don't think every show has to fulfill like a mandate of being super watchable or like being super interesting. I think some shows now are like designed to and serve a purpose of just being something that's on while you do something. I mean that was like originally sitcoms. You know what I mean? Like like when people were, when television advertisers and like TV people, when television was like brand new, like they were like, oh, we'll have sitcoms and this will just be like the purpose of it. They were like, oh, this is something that's on while your wife is folding the laundry or like cooking dinner. So like that's really not like a knock on the show. I'm just trying to reiterate that like this idea of just having a show that's like on and you don't really watch it is an idea that's existed for a very long time. So I think if that's what you're looking for, then this is a good show for that. But like, if you're looking for something to like actually sit and watch and like look at and like be absorbed into the story, I just then like that the show that fell short for me.
I'm kind of halfway into that. Like, I wasn't fully absorbed into Panic either, but it wasn't a show that I could just have on in the background because there were just too many like little details and they kept throwing things in there. Like they kept throwing us curveballs. One of those, like, it was like an in series, are you still watching?
Kind of situation. That's what I'm saying. Like, I think that's kind of smart. I think that's really great.
It is. But no, it isn't a show that that I feel like is seriously emotionally taxing. And it isn't like a huge time obligation either.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't feel like I wasted my time. I was like, okay, this was cute. Oh, you know, it's a good little palate cleanser, right? It's like, it's not going to keep me up at night. It didn't get my blood pressure all.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you're not like that. And that's the thing. And that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm not super invested in any of these characters. I'm not super invested in this story. It's just sort of there, but like, it's also kind of suspenseful and thrilling at intervals. And that's like enough. That's okay.
Yeah, that was enough for me. And that's actually the reason why I liked it. Usually, I'm usually on like the same wavelength as you. If I'm not emotionally invested in these characters, then I don't like the show. But I guess at the time that I initially watched it, A, this was exactly what I needed. And B, it kind of felt like one of those, and I'm 100% sure that the reason it feels this way is because the writer of the novel is also the creator and the writer on the show. It felt like one of those teen novels that I could read in like half a day back when I was in high school.
Right. Like, and like, that's the vibe. Like, you know, it's funny. I would say that like this show is definitely like, this show has a lot in common, like with regards to what we're talking about in terms of like, it's just on. This show has a lot in common with like The Outer Banks, which is another show that I sort of watched like I said, I wasn't really doing anything. I wasn't super emotionally invested, but I ended up coming out of the Outer Banks liking it, not because I think it's particularly good, but because it's like, yeah, it was just, you know, the Outer Banks is a lot like Panic in that it's like, it's mood, it's vibe. Like, but like, I would say like the inverse of Panic in the sense that like, it's all these just like really gorgeous, like orange, red sunset shots of, you know, the South Carolina coast. And it's like lots of beach vibes. You know, it's also a bunch of pretty white kids with a racially ambiguous friend, like girlfriend, like girlfriend character. And then also, and then like a black male best friend. And so it's the same thing. It's just, but it's just like, ooh, we're on the beach. Ooh, we're running from like, ooh, there's a treasure hunt. We're finding treasure. Now we're back on the beach. Now we're in a speedboat. And it's just like, yeah, why not? Like, do any of these things make sense? No, but why not? Let's go for it. I'm here. Like, I'm not really here, but like, sure, do that.
Yeah, I think one of the things that would have made Panic better, it's like long shots of the town. That would have been cool. Like long shots that were actually meant to show the town in a beautiful light. But like it's a whole thing with our protagonist and literally every other character on the show that Carp is a terrible place to live. I mean, it's a fictional place, but even the name, it's like a thinly veiled anagram for the word crap.
Right.
So
that's what you're saying. That's what, like, it's a very much a YA novel. I also think it's actually really unfortunate that like the person who gives the strongest performance acting wise in this is like the Nepo baby. Like you girls need to really.
Who's the Nepo baby that gave the good performance?
The one who's like crazy. Oh my God. Like, I don't know.
Oh, who. Moira Kelly, the sheriff's wife.
No, it's a guy. Like the one who's like, give me the dollar. Like, he's just, and he's like,
Oh, yeah. You're talking about the Ray Hall character.
Yes.
He does give the best performance. He absolutely does. Ray Nicholson. Ray Nicholson. Hold on. That's Jack Nicholson's son.
Yeah.
You know, I should have known from the smile. And he's kind of got like crazy eyes too. I'm not going to lie.
That's what I was saying. He's just like his dad, filling that same lane.
Shout out for the new generation of Nepo babies because they heard. They were offended and they responded accordingly. Listen, and I'm happy for that.
I appreciate it. I really do. It's like they heard we were talking shit and they said, listen, we got to go to acting class. We got to like pull it together. And that's a vibe. I respect it. I do. Truly.
I mean, I think he looks 30 and doesn't look like he just graduated high school, but that's the performance is
good. That's what I'm saying. I was like, and that's what I was saying. This is sort of the inverse of the Outer Banks. Cause I'm like, okay, everybody's looks 30, but we're playing teenagers. Let's go. Let's do it. I'm here. Oh man. Anyway.
Yeah. Like we have like, listen, I think he gave a great performance. I think the protagonist does good with what she's given. I actually think Heather Neal is one of the least interesting characters on the series. So I think Olivia Welch does what she can with the character, whose last name also is synonymous with, it's a synonym for the word zero, nothing. Okay. Like, that's cute. You know how she keeps saying, oh, the girl was nothing, the girl was nothing. I'm like, literally, her name is Heather Neal.
Oh
this
gosh.
Is like a YA novel written by someone who went to YA novel boot camp.
Amen. God bless.
Love that for her. It really is very casual in the sense, like you said, like we're not very attached to these characters. I like the story. I think the story could have been more engaging. They could have done more to pull me in. But and we talked about this when we talked about normal people. Novelists shouldn't be trying to translate their work onto screen. If you're not Gillian Flynn, let it go.
Yeah, you gotta let it go. It's interesting. I was reading about, I kind of did like some very basic research into the author Lauren Oliver, and I suppose they let her write it because a previous book she had written was adapted and became a film, which I did not see, But I remember, like, hearing good things about it. So then when I went to, like, look at, which the film is called Before I Fall, but, like, starring Chloe Mortez Grace. And so when I went to look at it, I was like, oh, yeah, because it's written by Gina Price Blythe. Like,
oh, yeah, I haven't seen it either. Like, it, nothing ever felt made me feel compelled to watch that. But I also knew that it was written by Gina Price Blythewood. And I was too scarred by Love and Basketball to give it a shot.
But I was like, oh, yeah. So, like, but it's like, it's one thing to see people who are really skilled at what they do something, and another thing to then be like, oh, yeah, I could do that. It's like, oh, okay. Like, I'm glad you think that. Like, glad.
Right. Just because you admire a skill set doesn't necessarily mean that you have the skill set. And it certainly means that you're, it certainly doesn't mean that you're going to have the skill set through sheer force of will.
But it's like, but anyway, moving on. But yeah, definitely, once again, definitely one of these people, Lauren Oliver, definitely one of these people that could, like, wrote all the episodes by herself, could have benefited from a writer's room, definitely could have benefited from being paired with a really skilled showrunner, definitely could have been benefited from like having multiple people really like a community, how, you know, television is really supposed to be written, which is by a group of people coming together to really eke something out. Because something else that, like, because I actually sat and watched this that was really sort of jarring to me was, like, the sort of inconsistency of tone. Like, I felt like the show, the narrative wanted to have its cake and eat it too. In a lot of ways, like it's a YA show. It's clearly a YA show. But then there's, like, this random scene with, like, almost full nudity stripping. I was like, what's going on here? I was like, stop.
Like, and here's the thing. If you wanted it to be Euphoria, you could have hit us with that from jump. At least from episode two, that narrative should have been set.
That's what I'm saying. Like, and you could have done that, but you've got to, like, commit to it. And this is what I'm saying about, you've got to have other people who are like, okay, so this is how you want to do this, that's fine, but, like, you've got to, like, have a consistency in the tone from, like, the beginning to the end. And then there's also just, like, I felt when I was watching it, there's all these, just from the beginning, it was so inconsistent, because it was like, you know, there's exposition and they're sort of explaining the world. And I'm like, okay. But, like, something that she purposefully is, I guess the girl, Heather Nill, is like, oh yeah, this, you know, they're the Squid Game, Hunger Game thing that we do. You know, the whole thing is like, they're like, yeah, the cops know, but they don't care. But then, like, the episode later, or, like, two to three scenes later, the cops are actually launching, like, a full investigation of what the is going on with this game. So it's like, no, you've got to, like, make decisions.
Oh, no, I think you might have misheard that. And I had the same issue the first time I watched it, but I watched it again yesterday, and she was like, the cops didn't care, like, past tense. They care because the previous year, people actually died. Then they started caring. Now it's an investigation because folks are dying. Even though the games are always, you know, skirting the line between legal and illegal.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's like, it's not clear. It's not clear that, like,
it's not clear. No.
That, like, this was, like, a weird, okay. So then that makes sense. But, like, it's completely unclear that, like, this is, like, a weirdo, silly thing that they used to do. And now it's become dangerous.
Right, right. And I mean, I don't think they ever saw it as silly per se, just because of all the money that's on the line. Because one thing that they keep stressing throughout the series, to the point where honestly it's exhausting, is that you don't get out of CARP unless you're, like, a genius, you're already wealthy, like Bishop Moore, who happens to be both, or you win Panic.
Yeah, and then, I mean, that was another thing. I don't know that I bought the girl, like, I don't know. Like, I feel like I get that, but there's another point where I just, like, there was something about the whole, like, I'm stuck in a dead end town thing that it felt like this was somebody's idea of I'm stuck in a dead end town. And, like, that was confirmed for me when you realized the girl who wrote it was, like, her family, she also comes, like, from a prestigious
like she, her, like the girl who, the Lauren Oliver herself is a Nepo baby in some senses, and that her family is middle class, that she grew up in Queens, and her family, like her, both her parents are like extremely successful writers and authors that like made a shit ton of money. Cause there's something really fake about all of that part that I couldn't.
I don't know. I believe that CARP is the type of kind of town that people never leave. I believe it. And it's going to sound, listen. Y'all are not laughing when I say this, but I'm going to tell you why I believe this is the kind of town people don't ever leave. They don't even have a Walgreens, y'all. If you look carefully, anytime you watch television or movies, there's always going to be a Walgreens, a Rite Aid, or CVS in any, like, outdoor shots. There's going to be something that signifies that they have some sort of proximity to the outside world with certain franchises like McDonald's or Burger King's or Chipotle. They don't have crap in CARP. They have nothing. However, this is a strong however, the Heather character herself is the one that debunks the notion that you have to win Panic to leave, because her original goal was to go to accounting school, which was doable. She had you know, saved enough money initially. And there was like a guarantee that she would have like a real job after this. She specifically says that she would be earning, just to start, twice as much an hour as her mom makes. And then it's only a matter of driving your car out of the town, right?
I feel that. I'm just saying, like, there's something about it that, like, I'm not disagreeing with that. I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, there's something about how the character, I don't know how to describe it. I truly don't. There's just something that felt really false. Like I was listening to somebody write dialogue that, like, or like write characters who, like, has never really met a poor person in her life. That's all. That's all I got. And I don't know how to describe
that. I agree with that. And I think that feeling comes from, I mean, it's the same feeling as when you hear, like, a white person talk about Black struggle, right?
Yeah, it's definitely giving that. Like, it's just like, okay, like, I suppose, if you think. Like, because maybe it was something in the...
Because... No, that actually makes perfect sense. And I think the reason why I might have felt it, but it didn't bother me so much, is because I grew up reading young adult novels written by middle-class white women whose protagonists were all in the quote-unquote struggle.
Yeah. Let me make a direct contrast, although this is probably a bad direct contrast, because that, like, she did not, whereas, like, I believe, like, so in Maid, I believe Alex, you know what I mean? Like, I believe, like, I get, like, that feels very real to me. When Alex is sort of doing her, like, Alex, I'm like, yes, Alex is a poor girl from a poor background who was, like, trying to be a writer. This Heather Nell person is the same thing, but there's nothing, but whereas, like, that feels very viscerally real, like, Alex's whole thing feels very visceral, like, this doesn't, like, at all, I guess, in a sense.
I think it's a matter of the writing and the direction, as you say. It all goes back to that lack of a writer's room. The bare bones are very good. It's the filling them in is where I think Lauren Oliver faltered. I don't think the blame was with Olivia Welch, because I think one of the better scenes from her in the whole series is that scene in the first episode where she's confronting her mom about stealing her money, right?
Right.
So I don't think the blame lies with the actress. I think the blame lies with the writing and just a lack of substance, if you will, with it. They really made us feel Alex's desperation.
Right.
Whereas almost everything that Heather did didn't feel vital. It felt optional.
Like, Alex feels desperate. Like, you can feel the desperation from Alex of where she's just like, what the fuck am I going to do? Whereas Heather is just like, like she's kind of like, I make money. I don't make money. I eat this week. I don't eat this week. Whatever. It's neither here nor there to me. Like, but once again, in the context of the show, I think everybody is kind of that way. So, like, it doesn't really stand out. Like, I guess it's fine within the context of Panic.
Yeah. I definitely see where you're coming from with the Alex character. Let's break down Heather's relationship with her mother. This is like a central one to the overall issues with our protagonist. She's been saving money all through her high school career to get into an accounting school, even though she doesn't want to be an accountant because it's financial security. And then her mother steals over $5,000 from her to get a new transmission for her car. Now, I call bullshit on that for a few reasons. She already called the mom out, either in this argument or prior, for using the money on things like cigarettes, lottery tickets, alcohol, and drugs. And we learn later on that her mother is struggling with a drug addiction problem and probably has been all of her life on and off, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't cost no $5,000 to get a new transmission on a Geo, man. You could get a whole new car for that.
Oh, man.
If you were going to steal from that child, you could have just stole from that child and just said, and what? Which is, like, low-key what she did end up doing anyway. I don't know why you didn't get a new car, is what I'm saying. I don't know why you didn't get a new car.
You know why? Oh, so, yeah, she doesn't get a new car. You know what bothered me? Oh, looking back, what bothers me about that is, like, I get the sense that, like, okay, so the reason why it's really tragic when Ryan, like, the reason why it's really tragic on the OC when Ryan's mom comes and fucks up is because, like, Ryan really loves her. Like, you can tell he really loves her, like, despite everything. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And, like, also why it's tragic when Sandy drops Ryan back off at his house and he sees that his mother has, like, cleared out. It's tragic because despite everything, he does love that lady. The reason why it's tragic and Shameless when Frank steals the money out of the pot is because Frank knows that, like, you know, Frank and Fiona and the kids have all had a talk that, like, this money is for this specific thing. And you, please, and we know you're an ass, but, like, please. And, like, he does it anyway is because, like, there is a moment where when they're having the conversation of, like, don't do this thing, it, like, Frank seems to understand, they seem to understand that, like, okay, he's, like, not gonna do it, but then he does it, and that sucks. I never get the sense that Heather likes her mom, like, loves her mom, or, like, has any nice feeling towards her, or, like, there's that emotional weight of, like, please, this is the money I have saved for school, mom. Please don't do this. Like, I know that you want to do this, but please don't do this. We never get that beat.
Okay, maybe this is going to sound controversial, I guess, but actually that's one of the things that I liked in the way that Heather and her mom's relationship was portrayed. The anger she feels is, in the way she talks to her mom, is almost as if they were speaking as equals, right? Her mom tries to frame the argument as, I'm the mom, you're the daughter, you owe me this. And she frames it as two equals, like, I worked for this, you didn't, you stole from me. And she uses those exact words. And I think it's interesting because, and I wish it was on a different show and not particularly like a stronger show.
Right.
But I rarely see these mother-daughter dynamics where the daughter doesn't feel guilty about the mother. She doesn't feel like she has to carry the mother, like she has to take care of the mother. And the parentified oldest daughter, which she is, because she's like a second mom to the little sister, right?
Right.
Who was like, okay, I'm going to do what I need to do by my sibling, but, like, don't ask me for shit because you're grown and you need to be better than this. And I want to see that dynamic more because I know it's not all sunshine and rainbows out there. And I think the way that a lot of these oldest daughters, especially of really irresponsible or emotionally immature parents, has always been portrayed is always in such a way that they feel such immense guilt
over the way their parents are or the way that the parents act. And it's like, but that's actually not your problem, though. And I kind of like the, but this is actually not my problem way that Heather deals with her mother.
That's a vibe. I think I hear that. I agree. I think I wasn't searching necessarily for the beat of like her not coming from that. I wasn't searching for the beat of like, maybe I love you, but maybe it's like, you've never, maybe I'm searching for the beat in the sense of you've never been a mother to me. So this one time, be a mother to me. Just this once. I'm not even asking you to do it. I'm just saying this once. And then when that's betrayed, right, that's really like devastating.
And you know what? Again, writer's room. Because it would have taken what? An additional piece of paper, an additional 60 seconds on screen during that fight to portray that and to like really lean into the feeling of not even anger, not even betrayal, but just like hurt, right?
Right. Yeah, it needed, like you said, that's, and I don't think that's, yeah, it's a lot. I think it's probably like 30 seconds. It's not a big, it's not a long, oh my God, whatever. So there's that. Okay, let's talk about, you want to talk about Bishop some?
Let's talk about Bishop. He's one of Heather's best friends. Natalie and Bishop and Heather are best friends, or a little trifecta. But like, as is usually the case, when three people are best friends, you always got two that are closer to each other than the other one. And Heather kind of bounces back and forth between being closest to Natalie and then closest to Bishop, depending on the era, right?
Right.
In the series' opening, we see very, very strong energy, very strong illusion that she and Bishop have feelings for one another. Mm. But that's actually, that actually nothing comes to pass from that. There's a series of misunderstandings, and then enter Ray Hall as kind of like this unexpected love interest, or unexpected on her part. And so Bishop and Moore. It was
completely unexpected on my part. I was like, wait.
They were literally joking about how this dude spread a rumor that she was pregnant once, like, to the school.
Like, and then she was
but
like,
now he's in love with her?
Yeah, now he's in love with her. Like, be so serious.
We need to get serious. So like Ray Hall being her love interest didn't make sense, but I went with it. And you know what, Olivia Welch and Ray Nicholson have good chemistry, not as good as the glances that I saw between Heather and Bishop, but it was good enough. Let's talk about Jessica and Dodge real quick. Did you buy that relationship at all, even before they realized that they were like, both of them were massive liars?
Like, I mean, they were telegraphed. This is the one that like, this is the one pairing that actually made sense, because they like actually set it up from the beginning. Mm-hmm. But it felt like she needed something to do. Like, it just felt like they were like, oh, we should do something. Like,
I'm glad you said that, because that's exactly how I felt. I'm like, were Yaga just trying to pad this character without giving her any real substance? Like, you guys could have padded her relationship with her father better, and he is a cop, so it would have actually leaned into the storyline more, but I guess that was just not an option.
Yeah, because that was another thing. I don't think I got why she was competing, because it's like, first of all, cops don't do shit else but steal money and do nothing. And so you can't convince me that the panic cops in Carp, Texas are any different. Granted. Her dad is a cop. And he is a police officer. So that means he is making a middle class salary. So why does she need to play the game beyond the fact? And he's, I would understand if, like, he disapproved of her, like, acting dreams, but he doesn't. He's like, baby, you can go to acting school, and I'm gonna, you know, support that. So I'm like, wait, so why is she doing this?
Right, but he wants her to go to acting school in the town. Wants her to like, remember, he said, oh, let's go to this community college, blah, 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 say blah. And I don't think he has enough money for her to relocate to L.A., right? So I think the one thing that the show did well
Is that they made her, they made the one kid who wanted to be an actress the game's creator, right? Because she played that role to perfection. She really made us believe that she wanted to win the game when really she was just like and going to lose eventually. And she was just trying to figure out how to orchestrate the games. I thought that was smart. And, you know, the games maker, unlike everybody else, actually gets like a little salary for their part because it takes like the whole year to plan the game. But
vibes.
Yeah, I feel like she was probably the smarter person there. She's like, I'm probably not going to win this and I don't even want to play all the way, but I'm going to get this money regardless.
See, and like I get why I hear what you're saying and I understand and I agree to some extent. But then, and this is why I was also about to say, I think I've just aged out of this, of the YA genre, because I was like, okay, well, if you're smart enough to create the game, like, surely you're smart enough to understand, because internet access is something that they have in CARP. I saw. I'm assuming you're also smart enough to understand that, yeah, you actually can go to community college for the first 2 years, make straight A's, and then go to USC on a full scholarship, transfer to USC on a full scholarship, and then you will be in LA. Like, you, there it is. It's done. Like, I was like, I don't get it. Like, I didn't get the reasoning.
Yeah, you know what, though? I think that's like, you're right. I think we both have age out of that genre, because that's a reason that you come to in like your late 20s, early 20s at the earliest. When you come out of high school, most people think that you have to, you know, go right into a college, or you have like a quote unquote real university, or you're a failure.
Right. When it's like, no, like you absolutely can go to community college and then transfer to like a big, you know, name brand school. And then, you know, these name, listen, the thing about like the UCLAs, the USCs, the Harvards, the Yales, the Princetons, the Browns, the NYUs, the Columbias, the Cornells is that like, baby, like those alumni are rich as shit. And like, they make these people pay, like, and they make all the middle class students pay like full rides. So if you're poor, like, in order for people to like not burn those places down, if you're poor, they're gonna give you a full scholarship, like, to be like, see, we helped a person. See,
right,
we're not evil. Like, look at us, we're so great. Mm. Like, that's what they exist for. That's the point.
Yeah, you know, and I think going back to what we said about Alex from Made feeling very, very desperate, but Heather feeling significantly less desperate, I think there was a lack of desperation all across the board.
Yeah.
The Heather character, the Natalie character, the Ray character, the Dodge character didn't need the money. So that actually made sense on that character, right?
Right.
But everyone except Dodge and Bishop should have felt more desperate. And ironically, the only person who felt significantly desperate was the girl who ended up robbing and like the panic money, the game of all of its money, and like stealing the game blind, right? No right. one knows the money was gone except for Bishop. But like, she was desperate enough to realize that Bishop was a part of the game in some way, follow him, realize that he was a bad man, and take the money, because that's what you do when you're desperate for real.
And that's what I'm saying. And then that was another twist. I was like, okay, so they made this random girl like really smart, so like, you're telling me that this random side character is smarter than our leads? Like, what are we doing here?
Not only smarter, that wouldn't have bothered me so much if she was just smarter, but she was on screen for a cumulative 25 minutes from all 10 episodes. She had a more interesting storyline than everybody
else, because she said, fuck you hoes, like, it's me, I'm that girl. And I'm like, yeah, you are, but like,
sis came through her little knapsack and took all 50 stacks.
She took 50 stacks and bounced. I was like, wait, what?
I think that's literally the last time we see that character, I'm not gonna lie. That might be, I think we may see her one more time after that, but I think that was the last time.
I remember thinking, like, now the show should have been about her, because clearly.
And she has the best line, too. She was like, gotta be the dumbest decision ever to make a rich kid the bad man. And that speaks, that line spoke volumes to me, because I'm like, yeah, only a person who had money would have guarded this money so recklessly.
check on the money every day. And why is the money out in the field and not in your house? You know, your house, your wealthy house that's never been broken into. Why isn't the money there?
Exactly. Like, what? No one's thinking. No one's thinking with their head right now. Like, I cannot even, I just can't. Oh my God.
Let a poor kid, an honest poor kid, I have to stress that. Let an honest poor kid have been the bag man and that money would have been in their mattress. Am I wrong?
That's what I'm saying. Like, I can't, whatever. Moving on. Next.
So yeah, last but not least, let's talk about the relationship between Heather and her employer, Anne, versus Heather and her mother. I feel like Anne is such a great representation of new opportunities. And I saw in the Anne character a way out, perhaps a safer way out and like a safe haven type situation.
I don't know.
I felt like if she had kept working for Anne, she might have started accounting school a little bit later, but she could have started accounting school without, you know, continuously risking her life in this game.
Deadass. So like Anne, I was like, well, first of all, it was nice to see Grandma Braverman again, first.
Yeah.
Second, I don't know. I feel like Anne was talking a lot of like lollipop hopes and fairy tale fantasies without like any real practical advice. But like, and maybe that's just like a personal problem because like the people in your life who give you like emotional support are very important. Like that is, that's true. Like there is no price for the people who, when you are like at your breaking point in terms of like reaching for something or trying to get somewhere and like emotionally you have broken, there's no, you can't put a price on that person who's gonna like let you cry and like rub your, and like, you know, rub your head. And Anne was definitely like that person of like, yes, baby, you can do it. Like, and you do need that. But also I wish Anne would have been like, these are some other options that are possible.
But you know what? Even in that, I feel like the show could have leaned into that more. Perhaps the show didn't pick up on it. Like maybe the show's writer didn't pick up on it. Cause like you said, that's not her. That is her lifestyle, right? Like she's probably relates more to the Anne character than any of the characters that are primary. But
right.
She sounds like someone. Like Anne sounds someone who's been well off her whole life. And I think that's super interesting. Because right. On TV, oftentimes we make wealthy people they're either absolute, you know, cunt wads, or they're always talking to the poorer person as if they can relate when they genuinely cannot. And I think most wealthier people that are in a position to help, quote unquote, often sound like Anne. Like all they speak is in proverbs and parables. Like, thank you for the non-help.
Yeah, thank you for the non-help. Appreciate you. No, you're so right, deadass, because that is exactly how wealthy people operate. It's like, thank you for like, all keep of your chin not up. Help.
Like, keep your chin up. I'm like, okay, is that like, is keep your chin up an app? Like,
yeah,
what am I going like, to do with that?
They want a mentor when really I need a loan. Like, can you do something valuable?
Right. And you know what? Deadass. The show doesn't say or do anything to make us believe that Heather is lazy or mentally unstable in some way. Literally, her only problem is being poor and having an irresponsible parent. How is she going to think and work her way out of that? Maybe one of those.
Maybe one of those, yeah.
How is she going to work her way out of both? Like, Sherry's going to be Sherry no matter who Heather becomes. And that's just what it is. But yeah, I think that the Anne character sounds a lot like a lot of people. And I think the closest we come to actually challenging that is in the conversation had between Anne and Sherry, Heather's mother. Like, and again, that conversation doesn't go far enough. It's like, we're about to get to some intense shit. Oh, let's back off. I wish the show had been braver. I wish the show had been a bit more gritty. I wish the show had been a bit more unapologetic about like the class discrepancies between Sherry and Anne, or the power imbalances between Sherry and Heather, and how this has informed their relationship as mother and daughter. Like, so many of the good conversations were left to a few sentences.
Yeah, like, And I feel like you can't do that. Like, you just, or like, you can't do that in a series where it seemed like there was such a disconnect between the writer. It just seemed like there was a disconnect between people. That's all.
Last topic of discussion. One thing I did appreciate about Panic. The sheriff is the bad guy, y'all. Which Vibes. Is wild because I've never, ever seen a show this flat out. Not gray area, y'all. He's the, like, the full-on villain here.
Right. I just think it's honest for cops to be bad guys.
Yeah, I feel the same. And it's so weird because, like, they're, like, all the cops in Carp, Texas are good people. And I'm like, yeah, I guess that might make sense. Like, the town's too poor for them to even be laundering anything. So I guess it would make sense that everyone on this police force is, like, a schmuck who actually cares about, like, the law. But no, this guy found a way to use the game to deal with, like, his gambling issues, right? Like, I'm going to get this money. And he's responsible for, you know, the life of his son and the son's girlfriend being lost. Like, and the show alludes as well. Again, another thing that was alluded when it should have been confronted, that he's responsible for Dana Mason's paralysis.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was a conversation that said that he had gotten terribly, terribly drunk. He was in another town. He was involved in a hit and run. He doesn't know if that person survived or not, right?
Right.
Fast forward, Dana Mason's mom is like, I need to know who did this to my child. And he pins it on Ray's brother, who was literally in jail at the time. He was in lockup, right? He was in custody for another crime, an unrelated crime. And it's giving very much that not only is he responsible for what happened to Dana, but then he used the fact that her mother needed answers to get himself a mistress so he wouldn't deal with his grieving wife.
Yeah.
That was such an interesting... I'm like, the villain has, like, really, really good... I won't say character development, but I feel like he has a really, really good storyline.
Yeah, one of the more, I think, thought through elements, or as much as the elements were thought through.
I'll give you this, though. Like, if you're gonna put your focus on anything, and, like, that focus is the villain, I'm not mad at you.
Yeah, genuinely, yeah. No, like, because every show needs, like, you have to absolutely have a strong villain. Like, you have to have a strong antagonist. You have to have a strong... person who is, like, you know, up against your hero. And maybe that was, like, part of also what was difficult about Panic, in the sense of, okay, the sheriff is the villain, but, like, how... And obviously the sheriff and Heather are connected in the sense that they both live in the same town. But maybe there could have been a richer choice in having the sheriff be more connected to her in some sort of way.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. I 100% agree with that. All I can say is, like I said, my biggest takeaway from the show in regards to the quality and why I think it's good quality is that the villain is unambiguously a villain, right? He's not just the antagonist to our protagonist. He is demonstrably a bad person. He is bad in numerous ways. He's continuing to be bad. He is remorselessly bad. He's the bad guy.
He is the bad guy.
I mess with it.
Yeah,
I like to be confused. And while I do enjoy an antagonist with, like, backstory, this a morally gray antagonist, or even a protagonist who's the real villain. I like this. I like this a lot. It feels very much concrete. It feels very centered.
Definitely. There's something very satisfying about just, like, a true blue villain. Listen, I'm a big believer of not all cliches are bad. Like, sometimes cliches are, like... But sometimes, like, when you're writing a story, you're telling a story, there's a reason why a cliche is a cliche, because it works. And that, like, sometimes I think people will twist themselves up into knots that, like, don't make sense and, like, don't serve the story in an effort to be quote-unquote original or quote-unquote, like, whatever. But, like, mm-hmm. no, sometimes it's good to just follow the script.
And you know what? Not only is the villain very clear, so are the villain's motivations. They make perfect sense. Cops doing corrupt shit for money makes sense. Like, it's 50K is a lot of money to a high school graduate. It's still a good amount of money, though, to a small town sheriff. Like,
right.
It make, and then when you throw in, like, there's a gambling ring around Panic as well, and he's making money off of that, makes perfect sense. None of it is like, that could never happen, or why would anyone want to do that? We understand him. We understand his motivations. It's very clear. And in that way, I don't have to twist myself in knots to try to, like, get into the mind of the villain and figure out what his motivations are, because that can be very annoying.
Yeah, yes, this is just definitively. But all in all, where are you putting Panic on Good, Bad, or Basic?
I'm going to give it a basic. Leaning more on the side of good, but I think it could have been vastly improved by somebody else's input, Lauren. Sorry, girl.
Yeah, sorry. I'm going to be really gracious, and I'm going to give it a basic, leaning on the side of bad. But I do think there is value in the series. There's a value in it. Because, I mean, it fulfilled, like, a mandate. Like, I was really impressed by it in the sense of, like, okay, there's, like, a little bit of Hunger Games. There's a little bit of Battle Royale. There's a little bit of Squid Game happening here in this, like, little thing. That's a vibe. Fine. So.
Yeah, and it was kind of cute that nobody died. This is, like, a thing that they like to do in YA now, where they're, like, literally killing off teenagers to, like, so that we can learn a lesson. And I'm like, can we stop killing the kids, please?
Yeah, can we stop it? It's weird. It's just getting a little weird.
But, yeah, it was cool. It was cool. I think the ending was really interesting. I will say, though, for this show, the most interesting episodes are the first and the last, unfortunately.
I actually fully agree with that because, baby, there were oh my God, some of those episodes in the middle, woo, I was really struggling. I'm not even going to hold you. Like, I was just like, what am I watching? This is ridiculous.
But that first episode was definitely meant to grab you, and that last episode was meant to give you a sense of closure, and they succeeded in that. But that middle ground was shaky, baby. Shaky.
Yeah, it was shaky. It was rough. It was a time. It was a storm. But we all made it through it together, and that's what matters.
There you have it, folks. This is everything that we think made Panic basic, intense, and interesting. If you'd like to check out this series for yourself, Panic is currently streaming over on Amazon Prime. If you've enjoyed this episode of The Good, The Bad, The Basic, be sure to share it with your friends. If you're a patron, be sure to check out our Panic playlist. If you haven't already, tune in next week as we keep this season going by discussing the Amazon Prime original, Daisy Jones and the Six, the musical drama which follows the rise and fall of a fictional band prior to their reunion tour.
The Good, the Bad, the Basic is currently streaming on all major podcast platforms, so be sure to tune in to our regular weekly episodes on the go. Leave us a review on your preferred platform and share our weekly episodes on your social media. Follow us at The Good, the Bad, the Basic on Twitter and at Good, Bad, Basic Pod on Instagram to get in on our daily content. Also, be sure to follow our SoundCloud page, The Good, the Bad, the Basic, where all of our weekly episodes debut. If you love this sort of content and want more, become a show producer and patron over on Patreon. You can find us at patreon.com/goodbadbasic. Your support allows us to keep bringing you our regular weekly episodes as well as exclusive bonus material. Until next time, bye everyone.
Bye.